live from Chicago. This is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by a panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Ron Gibbs, David Masiotra, and Doug Truax. Our program tonight coming to you from our home base at the Museum of Broadcast Communications, where our toll-free lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. If you'd like to send me a tweet, it's @Dumo. And if you'd like to join us on the website, you can go to beyondthebeltway.com. That's where the live audio and video stream of the show each and every Sunday night. If you have a computer anywhere in the world, or if you have a smartphone anywhere in the world, you can watch and listen and participate in beyondthebeltway.com. And again, it's nice to have you with us this evening. We obviously are going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump. He continues to dominate some news, but we're going to be talking about the problems of Hillary Clinton and the growing likelihood that the vice president of the United States is going to jump into the Democratic race and challenge Hillary Clinton. So we're going to talk about both issues tonight. And in hour number two, we're going to try a new experiment for those who are watching on television and watching us on the audio video stream. We're going to introduce a Skype participation in our broadcast this evening, which hopefully will become a part of something that we do on a regular basis. And I'll tell you a little bit more about how you might participate in that as the program unfolds. But the eyes of the political world have been focused on Iowa. And again, I think every story talked about all the calories that one burns there, and probably the American Heart Association should close that place down. But politicians love to go there, whether they're left or right. They all show up there. And again, yesterday, Donald Trump kind of stole the show again when he came in with his Sikorsky helicopter and really got the big pictures of the day and gave the kids of Iowa a trip in the helicopter. Is he doing anything wrong right now politically, in your view, Bruno Barron, one of our libertarian Republicans?
Other than the fact that he's Donald Trump, no. I mean, he's not going to win the nomination. He's not going to become the president of the United States. But given everything that he's doing, you know, I mean, how cool is it to be able to fly into Iowa and give kids rides on a helicopter? I mean, he's soaking up all the oxygen and, you know, doing what he does. And he's going to do that until the voting actually starts, at which point he will not win.
David Masiotra joins us. Nice to have you back, David. Your reaction, because you've not been on since the Trump boomlet has happened.
I think Trump resonates with people because he alone in the field right now is acknowledging that the country is in decline. He does it in his very obnoxious, buffoonish way. But when he says things like the U.S. is going to hell, that resonates with people who feel that their lives are in a state of collapse. I mean, when we've seen this cultural decay, economic decline, political dysfunction in our country, and rather than trying to put an optimistic, smiley face on the picture, he acknowledges the problems. So that resonates with people. But the problem with Trump is that though he may accurately diagnose the disease, he offers no cure, not even a sedative. So it's visceral and primal. And people are reacting to that visceral and primal resonance. But in terms of intellectual policy solutions, there's nothing.
Doug Truax is our other Republican this evening. Doug, what is your take on what Trump is saying and the way he's saying it? And is he in for the long haul?
Well, I definitely agree with David that he's tapping into something that's been around for quite a while. I think that we've got decades of incompetence in the political class that the base, especially on the Republican side, is very dissatisfied with.
So why did it take Donald Trump to do it? Why didn't any of these other 16 people understand and sense the same thing?
Yeah, he doesn't he's kind of got nothing to lose, right? So he's going to be Donald Trump after this is over, and he's going to be more famous, and that'll work out for him. But I do think, though, there's one thing that's happened in this whole deal, at least in his mind. I think that he's going to try to figure out how to get it done. I think maybe in the beginning he was saying, well, let's see what's going to happen here and try. I think he's starting to recalibrate and say, this is going better than I thought, so how do I start to pull this off? And I do disagree with you on one thing, though. You don't have to when you're campaigning. If you're doing great, right, everybody says, well, don't get too specific. You know,
right.
So you, so
no,
you kind of
right
so
well,
you kind of keep marching it down and see how, you know, see how it goes.
Ron Gibbs, our other Democrat, Ron, is this guy tapping into something so deep that it really, in your view, he could end up in the White House?
I wouldn't say he's tapping into something deep. I think he's tapping into people who are cynical about politicians, who filter things, who message things, and they have their own spin doctrine. He just speaks right away.
Why doesn't Hillary Clinton get that?
She doesn't need to do that right now because she's got a ground force and she's way ahead of the ballgame.
But nobody trusts her, Ron.
Let me finish about Mr. Trump here. He's P.T. Barnum. He comes in and he can just put the show on. And he doesn't have to answer questions and be specific because it's entertaining. But going back to my point, he's unfiltered and people like what he says. He's a straight shooter. And if he didn't like you, he's going to tell you he didn't like it.
And we live,
you know, but people find that refreshing.
Aren't those positive things? Aren't those? Yeah. Isn't that a winning campaign potentially?
I'm a policy guy, so no. I mean, it's one thing to see somebody who sounds really, really.
We're good friends,
right?
You want to govern, you don't want to campaign.
Look, I've never run for office. People who know me know that there would have been a time that I would have liked to, and I might someday. So I actually do like to campaign. Being a former radio host, I love to be out debating people and doing stuff. But the fact is, I'm a policy guy, so I want to hear what the policies are. Mm-hmm. And if Donald Trump actually started putting forth some serious policy and started calibrating that direction and acting like he actually knew what he was talking about, I would have to step back from the very harsh criticism I've been giving Trump, not taking him very seriously.
In the next segment, we're going to talk about his immigration plan. He did come out with a white paper on immigration. We're going to talk about it in hour number two. But one thing he said when he was talking about the candidates yesterday, as he frequently does when describing one of his opponents, he basically said, because of all the money, the $125+ million that Jeb Bush has raised, Jeb Bush is a puppet for those people. Do you agree with that?
Well,
whether it's Jeb Bush or Hillary Clinton, when somebody gets that much money, aren't they a puppet for the people that contribute to them?
Absolutely. And that there was a riveting exchange during the first GOP debate in which Trump indicted all of the other candidates on stage for taking so much insurance company money that they're unable or declawed and deracinated in the effort to solve the health care crisis. That's all true. And part of the Trump appeal is that he makes statements like that and refuses to
apologize. And he doesn't have to raise, money. Doug, what
because
about that?
Because we live.
You've had to go out and raise money.
Right.
When he says that about Jeb Bush, doesn't that really go right to the heart of Jeb Bush's candidacy?
Well, this is, again, he's saying what people are thinking. He's saying all the things that a lot of people say in their houses about what's going on in the country. And so when he makes that point, people go, that's a good point. How is he going to be independent? And so, again, it's just striking that chord with what's got people upset about professional politicians. And we should say, too, that Carson Fiorina and Trump have about 40% of the support out there right now when they're not politicians. So we go to 2 decades of incompetence, and this is where we are.
And we might, even though he has been an elected official for a long time, Bernie Sanders' rhetoric sort of comes from that populist vein as well on the Democratic side. 1-800-723-8029. We continue our discussion of Donald Trump. And when we get to the next segment, we're going to be talking about some of the specifics on this immigration reform plan. And if you think a wall should be built, he wants Mexico to pay for it.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. From Burbank, California to Burlington, Iowa, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, coast to coast on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio, and live on the internet at beyondthebeltway.com. Doug, you mentioned in the last segment that Donald Trump is beginning maybe to believe that he really can do it, if there was ever any doubt. I think there was some doubt by some people. I don't know if there was ever any doubt in his mind. But according to a published report this week, he is hiring all kinds of very professional people in Iowa and elsewhere, and he's really trying to put together a very professional campaign right now.
That's right, because he's seeing that even though it's very bombastic and all these things, I think people believe that he would try to do what he says says he would do, because he's got a track record of doing that. Whereas if you look at professional politicians, a lot of times you can go all the way through a campaign and hear things over and over and over, and then they get elected, and then you say, well, what happened to that thing? Well, you know, things have changed, and now I got to move on to
that. I got to
move on to my next election now. And so that's where people are with in the country, and they want to see somebody that actually says, hey, I'm going to go do these things, and
Ron
they can believe in it.
Your comment.
Well, I think, yeah, Trump is realizing he's going down the path here, and he's got to get substantive. He's a businessman, and just like he wants to build a Trump Tower, he's smart enough to know he's got to have good engineers that can build the Trump Tower. And the same thing now, his rhetoric now is coming home to him, where he's got to have a policy. He's got to have a program. We're talking about immigration in a minute or so. He's got to have the underpinnings to how that building is going to be built. And he knows that. And so his days are numbered with his rhetoric and the bombastic type style that he has, that if he wants to be president, he's going to have a plan, a strategy, a blueprint. A blueprint is how you're going to build it.
But also part of this bravado personality that he has, and it is honed by many years as the host of an immensely successful show with great demographics, The Apprentice. And every single week, millions and millions of people would tune in, and they would see him with his apprentices, and he'd be beating the hell out of them. He was demanding accountability, and you know what? You said you were going to do something. You didn't do it, and you're fired. I mean, this is the type of get-tough policies that I think a lot of people that it's more than just his celebrity. I think it's this image that has been honed by his television personality. Just like Ronald Reagan, and Ronald Reagan as host of Death Valley Days, was nowhere near as a successful television personality as Donald Trump. And yet that homespun, that warm, aw shucks personality that Ronald Reagan created on the screen, motion pictures and television, that's what made him an endearing figure. And he didn't have a lot of specificity when he moved forward. And one of the things that Trump says is, if you're looking as to whether I was a Democrat or I've been liberal on issues, he makes the point that Ronald Reagan was liberal on a lot of issues at some point and was a liberal Democrat.
Well, I think liberal Democrat at a time when liberal Democrats were still sane. I mean, we're talking about the 40s and 50s when Reagan was a liberal Democrat. Look, at this point in time, you have to step back and say, what's his real agenda? Is his real agenda changing? And might he actually be able to do something? I think it's fair to say nobody should really count him out. I very early counted him out, and I still think that's the way to bet. But you can step back and see this kind of stuff. But I think what's really scary here, and this is one point that's worth talking about a little bit, I'm a conservative that's generally hoping the GOP moves to the right or moves to the right in the appropriate way. I've always been more conservative than I have been establishment. But if you want to think about Donald Trump, what he'd really be like as president, kind of think Jesse Ventura as governor of Minnesota, who was roundly criticized, one-termer, the reason the establishment is the establishment, and I'm not praising them here, but they actually know how to run things. They actually know the nuts and bolts. This guy walks in, he's going to be a disaster.
But the voters, I don't think right now believe that, Bruno.
And some,
I don't think.
And the voters could be wrong.
I don't think they believe that when George Bush couldn't handle Katrina right. I don't think they believe that when Obama couldn't do the rollout on Obamacare right. I think there's the administration of the VA. I mean, every single day, really for the last maybe 20 years, there is some government screw up, some control by the establishment Republicans and some control by establishment Democrats. That's part of this frustration where I think
Bruce,
we are
I'll,
right
I'll,
now.
Let me just jump in really. Can I just jump in really quickly and address that? It's a very excellent point, and I have been complaining about the, and I've been telling all our progressive friends that their trust in government is misplaced like this. But if you think Donald, and this is to the voters out there, if you think Donald Trump is going to walk in and solve all of that in one fell swoop, you are sorely mistaken.
Okay, David. I think I would agree in one fell swoop because, again, there is this thing called Congress. Go ahead.
Well, I this won't insult anyone listening right now, because the chances are people listening have some literacy. But we live in an age of political literacy. America doesn't really have politics anymore. We have outrage. We have emotion. And that's why Donald Trump is doing well. I mean, 50% of the public doesn't read the newspaper. Most people, they wouldn't understand many of the terms we're using in this conversation right now. So Donald Trump appears on the television. He has this carefully crafted persona, which is pro-wrestling-like in its blustering appeal.
Immensely popular.
Immensely popular. He knows how to talk tough. He knows how to gesticulate. And it appeals to people who are largely uninformed and politically detached, because even if they are uninformed.
David, I think you're trying to make the point that this reality we have is not a good reality. But the point is, it is a reality.
It is a reality.
The reality is that the people that will decide this election, again, I'll give the short version. Republican, Democrats, they each start with 45% of the vote. The election is about 10%. Mm-hmm. The appeal, how do you get to that 5.1% of the 10% that decide elections? They vote on things that have nothing to do. They don't watch shows like this. They don't read.
Exactly.
But their vote counts as much as mine or yours or anybody at this table. And they are moved by emotion. They're moved because, oh, that's the guy that gave, you know, my kid a ride in the helicopter. Or, boy, I wish my kid could have a ride. I mean, that was a brilliant stroke of demonstrating. Here is a big, wealthy man. On one side we have, which is interesting that's going on in the country, on one side we have Bernie Sanders saying how horrible big business is and wealthy people, and they're all guys. He has a prairie fire on the left, and Donald Trump is just the opposite, and he's got one on the right. What does that say for the country?
We've got a long way. Right now we're early in the game, and Trump is playing this to get attention. He's enjoying it. But, again, I go back, he's a businessman, and he's going to put together an agenda eventually. But we've got a long way to go here with debates where it's going to weed out people for substance. I'm a policy guy, too. And we're going to see if there is really any underpinnings to his ideas out there. We're going to talk on immigration, for instance. Yeah. Yeah, he's throwing out a wall, but that I think, is the end game, is kind of ludicrous.
I want to just take a moment and bring everybody up to date on a Fox News poll that came out. This was revealed by Chris Wallace today. This was where things stand, Fox News preference poll. And you look and you see some of the changes. It compares today, this is post-debate, with a poll taken just a few weeks ago in early August. Trump is down just by 1 point, but he's leading with 25%, and it's up one from a month ago. Carson is in second place at 12%. Cruz, 10%. George Bush has dropped to 9%. He has dropped 6 points in 3 weeks. Huckabee is at 6%. He's been steady between early August and now. And Scott Walker, who was leading in Iowa in the early part of this month at 9%, he's dropped to 6%. He's lost 3 points. Now, the rest of that field, Carly Fiorina, as a result of her polls or her recent debate, she's gone up. She's gained 3 points. She's gone from 2 to 5, not exactly anything to get startled about or excited about. Kasich up one. Rubio is down one. So Rubio and Christie and Paul is down by two. Most people think that he was too hot in that recent debate. So you see a lot of movement, but clearly with Trump and with Carson and with Carly Fiorina, they're the ones with the pluses. They're the ones that are on the move. They are the outsiders. And again, I think the big part of that story is not so much that Trump is off 1 point, the fact that Jeb Bush is down so much. That's really something. Let's go to Steve listening to us in Milwaukee on the internet on beyondthebeltway.com. Go ahead, Steve.
Yes, I would actually agree with David's assessment that Trump's campaign is a pro wrestling type approach.
Yes.
And it bothers me that a freak show, it could be the flag bearer of my party. And I would take Ben Carson, Rubio, or Walker, or anybody over Donald Trump.
Okay. But, you know, here's something that I'm interested in everybody responding to listening to the show. I said last week on this show, there is no way in the world that Ben Carson is going to be the Republican nominee. And I don't think he's going to be the next president of the United States. The polls in Iowa suggest, and the national polls, that say that Ben Carson is doing well. Now, so there is a strain in the Republican Party where people who talk like Ben Carson and talk like Herman Cain a few years ago, they get some following. I mean, Herman Cain at one point last year was leading the polls. So my question to you is, do you agree with my assessment? I'm going to ask our Republicans this. Mm-hmm. Do you agree with my assessment that Ben Carson may be doing well in the polls, but Ben Carson is not likely to be the nominee of the party, given the world that we live in that seems to thrive on bombastic rhetoric? Mm-hmm. I mean, he's a soft-spoken guy. And there's many soft-spoken people out there, but he is the softest spoken. But when he talks, he says some important things.
Well, and I would tend to agree with your assessment of it. But the thing that I think you can look at those top three there, if you had Fiorina in that as well. But you had Trump, Carson and Cruz, and then Fiorina. And then you could add Bernie Sanders in this list too.
That's right.
They all have one thing in common. Everybody thinks they're authentic. They see, you know, we talk about Trump developing his image. I think that's it. That's who he is. I don't think that there's anything more. And so they see. And I think that's
he has no handlers.
That's what is people like about Carson. He is who he is, and that's what you're going to get. And the same with Cruz. He's got the one guy that says this is exactly what I do.
Cruz has been another one that is a plus and is sort of maybe on the rise. He may be on the rise as Rubio is declining. We're going to pause 1-800-723-8229 from coast to coast and border to border. Now in our 35th year on the air. Join us at the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we salute Snap, Crackle, and Pop, part of advertising's Greatest Icons exhibition. Admission is free all next week, August 18th through the 22nd. You'll see classic commercials, vintage print ads, and rare memorabilia. And you'll see the fun-loving boys in person, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, on Friday and Saturday. Free Rice Krispie treats to all. Come to 360 North State in Chicago. Snap, Crackle, and Pop at NBC make the world go round. Back in Chicago, time now for our guests to introduce themselves, and we'll begin with one of our Democrats, Ron Gibbs. Ron?
Thanks, Bruce. I am a professor at the University of Chicago Harris School of Public Policy, and I head up my own consulting firm, National International Public Affairs Consulting, out of Chicago, New York, and as backdrop, I am a veteran, served 4 years in the military of Vietnam.
And you were instrumental in seeing that the Vietnam Memorial was built in Washington, D.C. You were part of that leadership team.
That's correct. I was with Jan Scruggs and a small ragtag group of Vietnam vets coming back, and we decided to restore honor and dignity to military service. And the wall now is the most visited in D.C., and it was a catalyst for the Korean Memorial, WW2, and moving others along with MLK and FDR. So we're proud of that. We beat the odds. It's a great story. When the country would turn their back on veterans coming home, and that wall honors service to country. And the key is for those who went above and beyond for our country, 58,000 names on that wall.
Bruno Barron.
Boy, I wish I had that kind of a resume. We appreciate that. I appreciate it. I'm a senior fellow on education issues at the Heartland Institute. I'm the board member of an organization called American Transparency, where our website, Open the Books, puts every dime online in real time of all government spending. At least that's our goal. I also do a little bit of political consulting, and when I'm not doing that, I flip condos for profit.
David Masiotro.
Back by popular demand, I assume. It's been a while, and I'm happy to be here. I'm the author of Mellencamp, American Troubadour, available in fine bookstores everywhere.
Yes, I think we have a picture of it for those watching.
If it's not there, it's not
television.
A good bookstore. and I write regularly for Salon, Alternet. I've done some writing for The Federalist, so I'm all over the web, promiscuous, and I'm happy to be here. And, you know, it was interesting. My father was just showing me photos today from when he was in Vietnam. He's an Army veteran, so I'd like to second the motion and emotion of thanking you for your work in constructing the wall.
Yep, terrific job. Thank Doug you. Truax.
Doug Truax. I own an employee benefit consulting firm in Oak Brook. Live out in Downers Grove. Ran for U.S. Senate last cycle, and now I run Restoration PAC, which is leans towards the conservative side and making sure we have as conservative politicians as possible in office.
We have a unique situation this evening. We have someone that ran for the United States Senate as a Republican, and we have someone that ran for the United States Senate as a Democrat.
There you go.
They were not successful. They were military. They brought their military expertise to the voters, and the voters did not accept them, and it's too bad, but Perhaps they will run again. And again, we thank you very much. By the way, we're going to take another call in just a moment, but let me remind you, and I've alluded to this over the last couple of weeks, starting actually Tuesday night, we will bring live theater back to the Museum of Broadcast Communications, or to the theater. It's not back. It's not been here before. It's a play called Assassination Theater. It is a play that deals with Chicago's role in the assassination of President John F. Kennedy. I've seen it in previews. It's a terrific show. You can go to assassinationtheater.com and, again, come down and see the play in a museum Wednesday through Sunday. There'll be matinees on Sunday and Saturday. Again, it is a remarkable play, and if you're interested in what happened in Dallas on November 22nd, and you think you know everything that happened then and following that, I can tell you, you probably don't know everything that happened that day. Remarkable new play. It's a theatrical investigation of the Kennedy assassination, now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We got callers on the line. Let's go to Johnny. He's listening to us on our flagship station, WCGO, AM 1590. Go ahead, Johnny.
Yeah, just wondering if any... Well, it is Sunday, by the way. Any of your listeners feel that the campaign is just basically the person that has the most money or gets the most money from campaign contributions is going to supersede the, you know, promotion of the general welfare of the American people? I mean, you know, Bernie Sanders seems to be the only one that's acting in a Christian manner. You know, what you do for the least, you do for Christ. And the others seem to be, oh, my God, Tea Party, you know, taxed enough already. We won't render to God what's God. We won't render to Caesar what's Caesar's. And we got military in 152 countries. The defense contractors are bleeding us dry.
I think I would challenge one thing is that Bernie Sanders is certainly getting the most publicity for it in the Democratic primary. But I think certainly John Kasich in his debate performance spoke about a different type of conservative that doesn't want to leave people in the shadows, so
yeah,
I think there are some people that are talking about it. Your point, however, is
greed factor. You know,
it's a greed factor. But let me ask you, Johnny. I mean, this is sort of what Donald. It isn't ironic that Donald Trump talks about this. Donald Trump criticizes the elite class, just as Ross Perot criticized the elite class, just as Warren Buffett has criticized the elite class. They can do it because they are so well off. But when Donald Trump says that the $125 million that has come from donors to go to Jeb Bush, they all want something from Jeb Bush. He said Jeb Bush is a puppet. But I don't think Donald Trump is going to be a puppet for anybody.
Well, once he gets elected, then he's got free reign to do whatever he wants. And
right.
You know what the Bible says about the rich man, the least chance of the kingdom of heaven, like a camel slipping through the eye of a needle. So what happened to Judeo-Christian ethics? When we have a president that tries to spread the wealth or redistribute the wealth, as the Republicans say, that is, you're talking about Matthew. What you do for the least sick, poor, and the hungry, you do for Christ. And they're the first ones to say
Doug,
that they're the
Doug
Christian
Truex,
party.
Johnny, Doug Truex wants to get a word in. Go ahead.
Yeah, Johnny, you got to understand, though, that that's not a Christian tenet to have the government take your money and redistribute it.
Well, it's not the government.
Personal,
duty to
personal charity
the
is what was called
for,
not government
it's
forcing charity upon
duty
you.
Duty to promote the general welfare of the people?
Bruno
Barron.
I would argue that what they're doing, look, there's ways to redistribute wealth and there's ways not to redistribute wealth. I personally like.
I think we should do it the way the Bible says.
Johnny, we have a rule.
You know,
the callers talk, and then the guests talk,
yeah,
and then the callers talk. But we don't talk at the same time. So right now, put it on hold. Bruno's got the floor.
Yeah, there's nothing in the Bible that says we have to create a permanent underclass. There's nothing in the Bible that says we have to create a welfare system that actually destroys the family and the absolute nuclear family that has been so successful over time. And there's nothing in the Bible that says we have to create giant, false, fake bureaucracies that don't educate, that don't defend, that don't do things. So please stop with this idea that there's something about the government that is biblical, that we have to use the government to redistribute. Now, if you're going to talk about expanding the earned income tax credit, if you're going to talk about a guaranteed national income where everybody gets something from the government and we can create a much better base for all of this stuff and create health care and education in there, I'll listen to you. But if you're going to sit there and say we have to create more welfare and more policies that have failed, you're just going to lose me.
David,
well,
any comment?
Well, yeah, Bruno said there was nothing in the Bible that endorses these policies. Luckily, there's nothing in the U.S. Constitution that tells us our politics has to be based on the Bible, quite the opposite. So I would tell Johnny, the caller, that he can base his vote on any teaching that he would like, but he should reconsider using the Bible as a litmus test on candidates, because we don't live in that kind of country, and I'm glad that we don't. And I would also tell him to reconsider his endorsement of Bernie Sanders, because he indicted many candidates for being in the pockets of defense contractors. Bernie Sanders never met a defense contractor he didn't like. Just look into his record in Vermont. That's something that the progressive media won't report, but it's certainly true.
Okay. On that note, thank you very much for your call, Johnny. I said earlier we were going to talk about Donald Trump's plan. Here are some of the thoughts that Donald Trump has uttered literally in the last 48 hours about Mexico. These are some of his comments. Undocumented immigrants, quote, have to go. Mexico must pay for the wall on the southern border. There should be a mandatory return of all criminal aliens. Here's another quote. We're going to keep the families together, but they, those in the country, illegally, have to go. The United States should get rid of birthright citizenship. That's some of the rhetoric of Donald Trump. Now, again, if you look deeper into the immigration white paper that came out this week, which is his immigration crackdown plan, until Mexico pays for the wall, just in case they're probably not going to jump up quickly with a check, until Mexico pays for the wall, here's what Donald Trump is proposing. Impound all remittance derived from illegal wages. Increase fees on all temporary visas issued to Mexican CEOs and diplomats. Increase fees on all border cards, border crossing cards. Increase fees on all NAFTA worker visas. Increase Mexican port fees for entry into the United States. Now, those are, gentlemen, specifics. Doug, what do you think of some of those specifics?
Well, you got to put specifics out there if you're going to get into it. And I think that would raise money, right? I think that would bring in some money. So now, would the Mexican...
Which is his goal.
Would the Mexican government play along? Would they have to? I don't know. He's the guy. This is his deal. He negotiates. And he says, I got the art of the deal, and I'm going to get this done. And just as much as people say, well, he's not putting anything specific out there, well, he is now, and now we've got to debate it. And he makes a great point about we would not be talking about immigration if it wasn't for him, because all the other candidates don't go near it. Yeah, that's right. They don't even want to get anywhere near a specific. And so we're talking about immigration because of Donald Trump, especially with the Kate Steinle murder in San Francisco. That fell right in there. And so it's a national conversation, but it's very emotional. Because people are very concerned about the fact that as a country, it doesn't seem like we have borders, especially on the southern border sometimes, because you watch all the kids come across, and we've got to do something at some point, and we want people to get specific. So.
Ron Gibbs. Now, there's specificity from a guy running for president, just like when you ran for the Senate, you had to provide specifics. What do you think of some of those specifics?
And when I provided specifics, I had a plan to implement and a strategy to implement. This is throwing out ideas. Yes, they're interesting. They're provocative, somewhat bombastic, I think, because they can't, I don't believe, can get implemented. And there's something called Congress. That cannot be done by executive order if he is president, I don't believe. And I think it's a Christmas tree of ideas that he's got to now really say, how am I going to implement this?
We're going to hear from everybody else when we come back. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
James Dumont back in Chicago. Nice to have you with us. We're going to take another call in just a moment, but I want to get Bruno Barron and David to respond to some of the specifics or the bullet points in the immigration plan proposed by Donald Trump.
Well, they're not up anymore, but the wish list at the first list was a clown fest. The fact is that Donald Trump is not going to win anywhere near enough power in Congress or nationally to repeal the 14th Amendment, which is the only way you get rid of birthright citizenship, which you may like, you may hate it, but you got to change the Constitution to change it. The rest of it, you know, a fee here and a thing there, and we're going to get Mexico to pay for it. I think, you know, there's some element of clever strategy. Maybe he's setting himself up for a third-party run where he can literally win 40% of the vote on the immigration issue, just like the Know-Nothings tore the Republican or the Whig Party apart in the 1850s. Maybe that's what he's doing, but that was not a serious proposal. I generally laugh at it.
What part of the specifics did you not like?
Getting Mexico to pay for the wall. I've said this 1,000 times. I've said it on the show 1,000 times. There is no wall. You build a big wall, they're going to build a bigger ladder. The fact of the matter is the wall is in the workplace, and you have to have the workplace be regulated, and that's the way to do it.
I agree with that, but that's not what the voters are saying. I agree with what you've just said, but that's not what the voters are saying. David, specifics or your reaction to some of the specific bullet points that are in this plan?
Well, he was doing better when he was vague. The specifics are laughable.
Why?
But there's no shortage of xenophobia among the American people, and he's appealing to that base.
What specifically amongst those 6 points? What was laughable? I want to know.
Well, as Bruno said, he's not going to repeal the 14th Amendment. He has to work within a system of checks and balances.
In my view. Is part of the that's the bluster that we put up there. Mm-hmm. But again, I don't know whether we have the access to those graphics or not. But when we talk about some of the specific points about the fees, you know, and the higher cost of coming into the country, even legally, I mean, that's about $1 million. There's money there. Now, again, from a political standpoint, does this sound good enough to the people that are gravitating to Donald Trump? Does it sound like somebody, you know what, these are six ideas that I have these are six ideas that I have heard articulated by a candidate, which are six more ideas than I have heard from anyone else running this year insofar as specificity is concerned.
He's on a crusade. So the crusaders will forgive and allow him anything. The specifics are irrelevant. He could have thrown out six totally different specifics.
What about
his
freezing
supporters,
the remittance of funds that are going to illegal immigrants? You think that's a good idea?
That'll create a mass inrush of more Mexicans, because once you shut down those remittances, they're going to be even poorer, and there's going to be more people streaming over the border. It's one of the least credible things on the
list. Very good. Okay. Ron Gibbs?
I think it's a great strategy on Trump's part to put out these points, because now the opponents that he has are going to have to come up to answers for these questions. So he can sit back and say, here are my points. You tell me how to do it. And he's going to, I think, milk this for weeks to come. And he's going to be, you know, have the high ground. The opposition now has to sit here, as we are doing, to challenge these points and say why they're bad ideas. And he'll say, well, give me how to implement them.
Joseph in Austin, Texas, listening to us on KLBJ. I understand you're a supporter of the Trump plan.
You there? Can you hear me?
Yeah, speak up a little bit.
Oh, okay. You heard that I was a supporter of Trump?
It's according to the little note that I get, you believe in the Trump immigration plan. Is that not correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yeah,
good, okay.
And here's the thing. I mean, as far as laughable, I think some of your committee or your committee group, committee people are laughable. First of all, Trump, as far as convincing Congress, all Trump has to do is threaten to shut down the government.
That worked well.
You know, that scares the rhino something terrible. I mean, you know, McConnell and Cornyn and Boehner would just crap their pants if Trump threatened to shut down the government.
But so here's one thing. I'm going to interject, and then I'll let you finish your point. If, for some reason, Donald Trump is elected president of the United States, there's an awful lot of Republicans that are going to be singing a different tune, because they, first of all, their jaws will have dropped. They will probably need surgery to just move their jaws back in place, because they'll be stunned by it. But if this happens, and I'm not projecting it is, it's a long way from happening. I want to be real clear about that. I don't think Donald Trump is going to be the next president of the United States. But if it happened, and the American people will decide whether they want it to happen, if it happens, believe me, there's going to be 435 members of Congress that will have gotten the message, Republicans and Democrats.
All right. Number two straw man is the Mexican government is upset and won't build the wall or won't build help us build the fence. The Mexican government is hated by the Mexican people. They're on the verge of a bloody revolution right down there. I mean, Trump has all the leverage.
But Joseph, let me just follow. Joseph, wait a minute. Let me follow through on that point because I think you're right. If the Mexican government were to do this, wouldn't that just make them more unpopular with their people? I mean, literally, it's literally by putting up that fence, you're containing people that just they want to come to the United States. I mean, it would seem to me that the combustibility of Mexico would literally explode if they did that. You'd be confining people.
That would be good because Mexico is so corrupt. It's run by the criminal drug cartels. It is probably the most corrupt country in the world, next to ISIS.
Yeah, well, I don't know. There's probably a long line of people that would challenge that. They may be in the top 10.
Especially since we're all from Illinois.
No, we're not going to point fingers here. Listen, thanks very much for your call. We have callers coming in from Redding, California. If you're standing by, Art, don't go away. And also, in the next hour, we're going to continue this discussion. We're going to talk about broader issues, talk also about the appeal of Bernie Sanders in addition to Donald Trump and where there are similarities and differences. They seem to be touching a nerve in American body politics. And we're going to try something in the next hour for those of you watching us on television and for those of you watching us on the World Wide Web. We're going to introduce a Skype participant in our broadcast, a longtime frequent guest on this program who moved away. And his name is Chip Wilkins, and we'll hear from him live from Nashville, Tennessee, when we continue from Beyond the Beltway in Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Headed to Los Angeles, looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE. Join us at the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we salute Snap, Crackle, and Pop, part of advertising's greatest icons exhibition. Admission is free all next week, August 18th through the 22nd. You'll see classic commercials, vintage print ads, and rare memorabilia. And you'll see the fun-loving boys in person, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, on Friday and Saturday. Free Rice Krispie treats to all. Come to 360 North State in Chicago. Snap, Crackle, and Pop at NBC make the world go round.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by Bruno Barron, Ron Gibbs, David Masiotra, and Doug Truax. And joining us in this hour from his home in Nashville, Tennessee, Chip Wilkins. Nice to have you with us tonight. Our phone line's open toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's brucedumont@museum.tv. And if you'd like to also tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And again, if you want to join us on the World Wide Web audio and video, it's beyondthebeltway.com, beyondthebeltway.com. And again, we're going to be talking about illegal immigration. In fact, we're going to take a call left over from hour number one. Let's go to Art listening to us in Redding, California on KQMS. Go ahead, Art. You're on the air.
Hey, I'm not sure who the gentleman was that suggested that our immigration laws enforced and illegal aliens that are seen of specific nature. So this one basically addressed the person on your point.
We're going to go just a few more seconds. We've got a very, very bad connection. Can you speak up and speak directly to the question you have, sir?
Yeah, I'm Hispanic, and I reject the notion of conservatives who want immigration laws and xenophobic nature. I think the comment I'm really trying to make is that, you know, the American people is angry and Donald Trump is doing so well because of the fact Republicans haven't done anything since 2004.
We're gonna end this call. It has nothing to do with the quality of your call. It has everything to do with the quality of the phone line. I don't know what the problem is. We will try to rectify it. But I think what you were saying is that Republicans have been talking about this for a long time, and nothing is resolved. And you know, Bruno, in the last segment, you said that you think that you know the real wall should be built at the employer when someone walks in to get a job anywhere.
Right.
So there's an issue of E-Verify.
Right.
And various politicians have talked about that. Why isn't E-Verify the official law of the land? And if you are an employer in the United States at any level, you must use E-Verify. Wouldn't what you're saying?
That would be the beginning of solving the real wall problem, which is not building a wall at the Rio Grande, but building a wall where people come in to work.
And why is that not done?
If I'm not mistaken, the 2006 bill when Bush was president, Rubio's bill, the bill that they talked about last year that Obama had in there, it had fines, it had taking people who came here illegally and making them leave. It had many, many things that many, many anti-immigration people are for, and I think E-Verify was in there, but I also am guessing that there were probably exceptions.
Go ahead, David.
The caller, from what I could understand, was trying to challenge me on my point that Trump is stirring the xenophobic pot, which has an aroma that many Americans flock toward. And I'd like to respond to that challenge. If it isn't xenophobia, it's aversion to accepting responsibility. Trump claims rightfully that this country is in decline, yet he tells Americans, you don't have to feel responsible for that decline. It's all Mexico's fault. It's all China's fault. It's all Japan's fault. The fault of American problems is American culture. It's American politics. It's American government. It's American
schools.
Well,
he says it's American politics. He is saying that we have stupid politicians, and he is putting the blame on the politicians who were elected by the people.
Yes, he says that.
Isn't that blaming them?
Yes, he says that. But then at the same time, he points the finger at Mexico. Mexico's killing us at the border. They're killing us in trade. China's killing us in trade. Japan is killing us in trade. Well, who signed the trade agreements, and why did they sign those agreements?
It's bipartisan.
Yes.
That's bipartisanship.
Yes. And it benefits, this is the part that Trump leaves out of the equation, it benefits people who shop in the same clothing store as Donald Trump, because they can open up their manufacturing plants, factories in Mexico, in China, not have to pay a minimum wage, not have to adhere to OSHA, not have to adhere to environmental regulations. That's the real issue.
Let us bring into our conversation, we're going to try a Beyond the Beltway experiment right now. If you're listening to us and watching us on television or watching us around the world on beyondthebeltway.com, we're going to bring into the conversation Chip Wilkins. Chip Wilkins, are you there? We're going to welcome you from Skype. Nice to have you with us on Skype this evening. This is a historic moment in our history. You used to be a regular guest on this program. You've moved to Nashville, Tennessee, and you've agreed to be our guinea pig for our first Skype participation. So let me begin with substance, because you like substance. Pick up on this conversation that we're having right now. What do you think Donald Trump not only is saying, but why is Donald Trump resonating so soundly, at least with the Republican Party base at this moment?
Well, I think Donald Trump is basically resonating in many ways for the same reason that Bernie Sanders is because the vast majority of our fellow citizens see our entire political system as corrupt and not in the best interest of the people of the United States. There may be certain interests that are served, but as far as the general good of the citizens of our country, neither party is working for that purpose. They're all being managed by money, PACs, however you want to describe it. I personally think of it as quasi-legal bribery. And that anger, which is why, you know, on one hand, Sanders is drawing tens of thousands of people in August before the primary year starts. And Trump, on the other hand, is sitting at the top of the Republican poll, is because people are fed up. They're mad as hell.
Does this represent, because we're seeing it in two parties, does this represent an opportunity for a viable third-party challenge to the traditional parties if neither one of them select Sanders or Trump, which I still believe is a long shot for each candidacy?
I think the third-party challenge, for obvious reasons, is very, very difficult to execute. You know, certainly in Trump's case, he's got money, which makes it more possible than would be in the case of Sanders. But I think that what people have concluded is that the path to overthrow the system as is currently perceived is to do it from within the parties themselves, with, in either case, between Sanders or Trump. That's why they're both working within the structure, because that's the shortest path to get the message out.
Now, I want to ask you, and I want to get reaction from our other guests around the table, because, you know, 6 or 7 months ago on this program, I had said that I thought the guy that was tapping in to a lot of voter sentiment out there was Ron Paul. Now, Rand Paul, I'm sorry, Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. This was before the boomlet by Sanders. It was certainly before Donald Trump entered the race. He was still flirtatious, and frankly, I didn't think he would get in, but he did get in. But I thought that Rand Paul had his pulse on things. But Rand Paul really hasn't gone anywhere. So my question to you is, are you surprised that he sort of petered out so quickly?
For me personally, no. I didn't really think that he had the wider appeal. He's certainly intriguing in many ways, as was his father, because there are certain areas he goes to that most in the political class won't touch. But there are other things that he has been, as he's become more and more in the national spotlight, reluctant to take on.
All right, we're going to pause. 1-800-723-8289. We are talking with Chip Wilkins via Skype. We have our studio guests here. They will all be back when we pause. 1-800-723-8289 from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Well, back in Chicago, thanks very much for joining us tonight. 1-800-723-8289. If you're watching us, our program on beyondthebeltway.com, let me remind you again, we've had an experiment in the last 15 minutes, and we're going to have it continue because Chip Wilkins will remain with us for another segment. But if you are a regular listener to this program or a viewer of this program, and you would like to participate via Skype, if you know what Skype is, and you know you have Skype, virtually the Skype capability on every computer in the world these days, and some of the newer computers have cameras with them. If you would like to participate, send me an email, brucedumont@museum.tv. In the subject matter, just put the word Skype participant. Tell me a little bit more about yourself, maybe some of the issues that you are most exercised about, and who knows, maybe in a future broadcast you will be one of our Skype participants in the show. Because I know we have a lot of people that are regular listeners around the country, and again, they may listen to us on radio, they may watch us on television in Chicago, they may be now part of the internet audience that we have. But again, Skype is something that more and more programs are using, and again, we've introduced it tonight, and so we're very interested in your participation. But we want to hear from you, and again, our guinea pig tonight, our inaugural guest, is Chip Wilkins, who for almost a decade represented sort of political issues here and progressive issues, and he joins us from Nashville, Tennessee. I want to pick up on something that you alluded to, Chip, and we're going to let our guests around the studio here in Chicago talk about it, and that's the possibility of, is a third party viable this year? Bruno Barron, because this has been near and dear to your heart for a long time. Mm-hmm. Is now the time potentially?
Not really, because the barriers to actually surviving and doing it are too great at the national level. Not only do you have the issue with money, but you've got the issue with getting on the ballot in 50 different states, and then you have the issue of the Electoral College. So everybody who wants to talk about a third party, show me which state Donald Trump is going to win so he can get some delegates to prevent the Democrats or the Republicans from reaching 270, and then you might have some bargaining power, but you don't get elected, period. So it's a little bit too hard. I will shift this on everybody and say, if you're really serious about starting a third party this year, then Jeb Bush and John Kasich should flip. They should leave the Republican Party, start a centrist party, triangulate against the socialist Democrats and the Ted Cruz Republicans, and say we're the ones that have the answer, and that's their path to victory.
Ron Gibbs, what are your thoughts on a third party? Is this the time to consider it?
I don't think it's feasible. I think it's got to take a long-term strategy. We were saying it during the intermission, a state strategy. Just as with same-sex marriage marijuana laws, it's been a domino effect of states cascading to where there will be federal legislation that will pass because these states have passed laws. And the same thing, if we can get a third-party candidates, as you're saying, pick states where they can win, and you can build that infrastructure then to build it nationally. But it's going to take time.
Doug, what about the dynamic that we have right now with with a Bernie Sanders, with a Donald Trump? They're both speaking to riled up constituencies. Mm-hmm. I don't think that's necessarily 50% of the vote, but if you're going to organize something that would eventually have some impact, you got to be prepared for a couple of losses. But is the dynamic? Are the numbers out there that this might be the time to try it?
Yeah, I don't think so. And just personally, from a Republican standpoint, I'm pretty excited. We've got a great field. I know we spent a lot of time talking about Trump, but there's a lot of other great candidates. The Democrats have a really pathetic lineup. Really, we haven't got to Hillary's emails, but there's a tough row for them to hoe here going forward. And the Republicans, I feel great about where we are right now. And Donald Trump, you know, he brought we had a debate that usually has, what, 6 or 8 million people watch it. We had 24 million. So, and they all got to see, and hopefully some of them saw Fiorina before that. Yeah. And You know, and then you got Hillary dodging questions. So David, what about investigated by the FBI?
Is this a unique moment for a serious discussion of a third party candidacy? Although Donald Trump sort of suggested in one of the interviews today that, you know, that he thought he was being well treated. He's sort of setting the stage that, you know, I don't think he's really
Trump was
run.
Using the threat as leverage.
Yes.
But the third party is nearly impossible because American politics bears many similarities to pro wrestling. If you turn on the WWE, you'll see some similarities. There's a lot of theater. There's a lot of stagecraft. There's characters like Donald Trump. And this isn't universally applicable. But one of the similarities is that during the broadcast in the ring, you see the villains and the heroes, the good guys and the bad guys, fighting each other. But backstage behind the curtain, they're working for the same purpose. One of the issues on which Republicans and Democrats will coalesce and collude is to prevent any third-party insurgency. Look into the rules of the debate. When Ross Perot got into the debate in the early 90s and he threatened both parties, they took the debates out of the hands of the League of Women Voters and created a debate commission run by Democratic and Republican leaders.
Chip, I want to go back to you because over the years, I want to go back on and let you sort of lead the discussion on the Hillary Clinton email scandal. I said last week on this program that to me, this era, this moment reminds me of Watergate. The drip of this investigation could lead to some sort of legal action, and that one of the reasons why there's been discussion that Joe Biden might enter the ring in this race is that maybe the White House knows what's on all those thousands of emails that have been destroyed, and they fear that at some point Hillary Clinton is going to be a dead duck running for president of the United States. What's your thought on the Clinton email controversy?
Well, I think from a very practical perspective, what it's about more than anything else is her sense of propriety. You know, the fact that as a sitting Secretary of State, she was using a private email server for so many reasons is just fundamentally wrong. And so whether or not there's going to be anything there that would lead to some kind of criminal action or not, I would be skeptical of that. But nonetheless, the propriety in and of itself is highly problematic, and it erodes her credibility that she, you know, she's outside of the law. She has a kind of a cavalier attitude because of whatever reason she uses to justify that decision. And I think that's the real damage that's being done. We're likely to find anything in there that's going to be so damaging.
Is Bernie Sanders your guy for this year?
Well, certainly in terms of what I've seen so far, and I'll admit I have not been following it very closely. It is August, the silly season. But certainly a lot of what he's talking about, you know, I heard someone characterize it in the first hour is that he's against big business. He's not against big business per se. What he's against is undue influence. And for anybody who's ever read Adam Smith, The Wealth of Nations, one of the things that Adam Smith has warned against is specifically financial capitalism and how it can destroy your country.
I think what David Masiotra said, and I'll let David speak for himself, but I think he said that if you looked at Bernie Sanders' support for the defense contractors, David, repeat what you said so that you can talk directly to Chip on this matter.
Bernie Sanders has a very friendly and favorable relationship with defense contractors and also the prison industrial complex. So he isn't as progressive on these issues as many would praise and celebrate him as standing. And I don't think if you don't address the fact that 22 cents of every dollar of discretionary spending is going to the Pentagon, then regardless of if you're a leftist, libertarian, Republican, Democrat, you are not going to be able to reorder and restructure the budget to better serve the public interest and common good. And Sanders, in his political history, has shown not only an unwillingness to confront that basic fact of politics and policy and budget, but a willingness to cooperate and benefit from it.
Go ahead.
Well, I don't know any of the specifics that are being alleged here, for lack of a better term. So maybe there is something there, but not that I'm aware. What's really clear, which drives a lot of it, is we had a near depression in 2008, and no one, and I repeat, no one of substance was indicted. You had whistleblowers that were sitting at the Justice Department who were inside some of the major banks, who knew the whole story, had evidence, came forward, and no prosecutions were done. So I think there's a large segment of the country, not just the progressive base or the Democratic base, that does not believe that people should be able to flout the law with impunity. And in fact, bankers, as well as everybody else, should be subject to the rule of law.
Bruno Barron's got a comment for you. Bruno?
Yeah, thanks, Chip. I almost want to comment on that, but I'll ask you this question instead, because Bruce had brought this up a little bit, but with Biden maybe getting in. But I'll just throw this out. I'll just throw this out for the you and the audience and get your response here. But if Biden gets in, isn't that a huge boon to Bernie Sanders? Because the Bernie Sanders vote isn't going to reassess and flock to Biden. Almost all of Biden's vote comes directly off the top of Hillary. O'Malley and everybody else in the race, they're kind of like chihuahuas nibbling at people's ankles. And it's basically then it becomes Sanders, Biden, and Clinton. And that only benefits Sanders just in the dynamics of everything. Or am I wrong about that?
No, I would certainly concur with that. That, you know, again, because of how Sanders is positioning and the position he's had on certain issues, I think he sits outside the conventional box, shall we say. And so if Biden is just another Democratic flack, quote unquote, from the perspective of the Sanders supporters, it's exactly what he would tend to do, is split the Hillary and Biden vote.
Okay. Listen, Chip, thanks very much for being with us. We appreciate your willingness to be the inaugural guest on our Skype participation in the broadcast. Thanks very much for your years of regular participation here in Chicago. It's good to hear your voice from Nashville, Tennessee. And again, if you'd like to participate in a future Skype participation on this program, send me an email, brucedumont@museum.tv, and put in the subject matter Skype interview. Okay? I'm Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago. Join us at the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we salute Snap, Crackle, and Pop, part of advertising's greatest icons exhibition. Admission is free all next week, August 18th through the 22nd. You'll see classic commercials, vintage print ads, and rare memorabilia. And you'll see the fun-loving boys in person, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, on Friday and Saturday. Free Rice Krispie treats to all. Come to 360 North State in Chicago. Snap, Crackle, and Pop at NBC make the world go round. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. And our guests will now introduce themselves. Rod Gibbs, you're on the air. Tell everybody who you are and why you're here. Raise your right hand after me. Go ahead.
Yeah, there you go. Yes, I'm innocent. Ron Gibbs, Vietnam vet, teaching University of Chicago, and public affairs consultant.
And Doug Truax.
Doug Truax, employed benefit consulting firm in Oak Brook, run Restoration PAC, with a conservative-leaning PAC helping candidates win across the country.
David Masiotra.
Writer, general paid pest, author of Mellencamp, American Troubadour.
What's the name of that book again?
Mellencamp, American Troubadour.
And it's about John Mellencamp.
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Yes,
it is. It's available at all reputable bookstores and Amazon.com?
Yeah, reputable, the key word.
Okay. Now, did you interview John Mellencamp?
No, I did not. I interviewed many of his band members and people surrounding him.
He wouldn't talk to you?
No. So we try to get him on the phone now?
Well,
you have access?
So does he have access? So he has seen the book?
He requested a copy not too long ago.
So, and the lawyers, you haven't heard from the lawyers yet?
No.
Well, do you think he's going to like this book?
I think he would like it.
Where does John Mellencamp fit in the pantheon of, you know, Bruce Springsteen and other great...
Well, one of the arguments of my book is that he's underrated, that he belongs in the top tier of American songwriters, American troubadours, as the title would have it. But because he started out poorly in his career, and he had somewhat of an embarrassing name, Johnny Cougar. And because he's from southern Indiana, and he's remained there for his entire career, chronicling life there, he's been dismissed with this condescending, unfair regionalist tag. But if you evaluate his music from the raucous, rollicking, ribald rock and roll of American Fool in 1982 to just this year's Plain Spoken, a great collection of folk records, very plaintive and pensive and profound. You find that consistency really works in his favor. And as a songwriter and singer, he's more consistent, more excellent than many of his competitors, many
of his peers. You've made your case. The book is Mellencamp, American Troubadour, and Bruno Barron. I'm sure you're going to run out and get a copy.
I am going to run out and get a copy.
Like Petula Clark. Is that true?
No, no. I will say this, though.
My next book.
I've definitely been wanting to say this for the last 30 seconds. John Cougar Mellencamp has more talent in his little finger than Bruce Springsteen has in his entire being.
Wow. And, that may be one of the most controversial things you've ever said on this program.
It should be. I like John Cougar Mellencamp. I like John Mellencamp. But I probably will get the book. I know I sing along to many more of his songs than I do Bruce Springsteen's. I'm also the senior fellow for education issues at the Heartland Institute, and I'm a board member of an organization called American Transparency.
During the break, you were talking, David, about one name that we haven't mentioned because he hasn't gotten a lot of traction, but that's another Democrat that is running, and that is Jim Webb, the former senator from Virginia. And you are uniquely excited about him.
Yes, I think Jim Webb is the best candidate for the job at this point in the race. He has a great track record of public service and independent politics in this country, and he offers a unique blend of liberalism and conservatism that really speaks to the communal crisis in the country.
But progressives don't like people with a strain of conservatism. They don't like those people.
No, and that's unfortunate. I think President Carter, 90 years old, we just heard that he's sick.
Right.
We should all be thinking of him.
Right.
I would argue he's a very underrated president. President Carter was economically progressive, but in many ways socially conservative. And Jim Webb talks about how the Democrats have lost appeal with white working class voters.
Without question.
Because they've moved culturally to the left.
But Ron, you...
So he can build a coalition, just to finish my point.
Now, what do you think of Jim Webb?
I've known him personally, picking up early on with the Vietnam Memorial. He was working in the... House as the Veterans Affairs Committee, a staff director for Congressman Hammerschmidt. And he started out a Republican, and then he switched to Democrat. He worked in as Secretary of Navy, resigned.
Under Reagan.
Under Reagan. And then from Virginia, and then he turned Democrat and ran against George Allen Jr., very popular.
But you said that he was against the Vietnam Memorial initially?
Yeah, he was against the design. He was all in favor of returning honor and respect for service to country. But when the design came out by Maya Lin, it was looked as upon a black gash. And even H. Ross Perot came out against this, which was really something when you have a billionaire then fighting a group of Vietnam vets because we haven't even broken instruction yet.
Yeah.
But when she won the design and she happened to be Japanese-American, that also was controversial. There were many disparaging comments about her. And so Webb fell into that camp. If they wanted something like the Iwo Jima Memorial, something very heroic, statues. And it took people time to digest this thing of the names. It's all about the names and every individual there. And now it's the most visited memorial in Washington, D.C.
I want to switch back to contemporary politics and talk a little bit more about Hillary Clinton's email problems. And I want to start with you, David.
Can I just say one more thing about Jim Webb? Because I think it relates to the earlier conversation about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Jim Webb's a brilliant writer. I have an essay coming out soon in which I comprehensively review many of his books. And when he declared his candidacy, he did so with a 2,500-word essay on his website and Facebook page. So Jim Webb is attempting to run this very antiquated campaign of communicating to people with the quality of his prose and the consistency of his ideas.
He's going nowhere.
Exactly. That's my point.
You started this program by brilliantly assessing where we are as a country and why Donald Trump is immensely successful.
That's my...
And we're closing the show by you describing a guy that you you like who's going to go nowhere.
That's my exact point.
From a different
and yet Donald Trump comes out with these sound bites and excites millions of people.
The point I want to make
he was 35 points down against George Allen when he started that campaign. 35
He's
points.
He's more than 30 points down.
Well, I know, but he came back. He put together a coalition, and he beat George Allen to win that Senate seat, okay?
That's because he came from a state where there was a thing called conservative Democrats.
And Virginia you know, United States is not Virginia. I mean, the fact of the matter is he's probably too far behind the eight ball. I will say this. Jim Webb is the only Democrat on that list that I'm even remotely worried about losing to if they ever win the nomination. But the good news for Republicans is that the
Could he be a running mate? Could he be a running mate with Hillary?
No. Number one, Hillary would never. Here's the real problem. Everybody talks about how far right the GOP has moved, and nobody's talking about the fact that the Democratic Party has moved so far to the left so fast that it's if it's not more, it's at least equal to the way the GOP has moved right. But I also wanted to jump in really quickly here and give the audience my secret sauce campaign consultant's truth of what's going to happen in the election. Don't look at the poll numbers of where the polls are right now with Trump and all this other. Look at the spread between the positive and the negative view. Everybody talks about how great Trump is doing. No one's talking about the fact that no one in the race has his negatives. He is not going to win a single primary. He is not going to be the nominee. And if you really want to start guessing who's going to be the nominee, don't look so much at money, that matters, but look at where their negatives are relative to their positives, and the one who has the lowest negatives is usually the one that ends up the nominee.
Which, at this moment, is Carly Fiorina.
At this moment.
All right. Let's spend a moment about talking about Carly Fiorina. Mm-hmm. I said last week on this program that, in my view, based on her appearance last week on television, that in my view, Carly Fiorina had crossed over and, to me, is a viable candidate for president, not just someone who is running because she's hoping that she would be selected as a running mate. Mm-hmm. That she really is, the way she talks, not only the position she has, but the way that she articulates them in a cool, calm, collected manner, she is the real thing.
I think Republicans are seeing, they're visualizing Carly debating Hillary.
Yes.
And they like the look of that.
They do like that
and
a
so,
lot.
But, you know, but the thing that we're kind of struggling with, too, is that, you know, as we get closer to the end of the year, the bar just keeps going up for the quality of the candidate. And Republicans, you know, when Bruno says, Trump, there's no way, you know, what he's getting at is just that it just gets harder and harder to thread that needle as we get more and more attention down. And I think where Carly's going to have a problem maybe is her track record at HP. She's great CEO in some regards, but it was a failing bid coming out of there. And so I think that she's going to have to deal with that at some point because now she's going up. But it's like I said, the bar keeps getting higher and higher, and that's where you're going to weed people out as we go forward.
Is she going to be viewed as a corporate CEO, Bruno, that, again, she came from nowhere. She came from as a secretary. She became the CEO, and there was a boardroom coup. Those things happen. They happen to men and they happen to women. They happen to them for positive reasons, for negative reasons. Can she explain that away? I think she can easily explain away her loss for the United States Senate in California.
Right.
I think that's, you know, Donald Trump said, well, you know, she lost in a landslide. She was running as a Republican in California against Barbara Boxer. That is an uphill fight.
Correct.
I don't think her loss there should be held against her.
I would agree that, first of all, Republican losing in California shouldn't be held against them. She actually did better than Meg Whitman, which was not really a surprise.
Right.
But the fact of the matter is that everything I've seen, she's a very, very talented, credible person. The problem is that, you know how they say on, you know, the saying goes on football that any given Sunday, the worst team can beat the best team. In politics, it's a little bit tougher. For, you know, Carson, next to no chance. Trump, some chance. But it's very, very hard to overcome that hurdle that she has to get into the top tier.
I want to hear reaction from our audience to that. 1-800-723-8289. From Chicago, I'm Bruce Dumont.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Bruno, you were making a comment about Hillary Clinton and her email issues.
I think she's in real trouble. I've been looking at it kind of in a positive way from a Republican side, and I actually hope that I don't want her to get indicted if she doesn't deserve to be indicted, but if she gets to be through to the nomination, there's so many negatives against her, and she's not Bill Clinton. She's not a good campaigner. I mean, she has money and she has clout, but Chip said it very well. It's even if there's no indictment there, it's a serious judgment issue, and I think she's in serious trouble.
If you have, it seems to me that one of the most important things, not only in politics but in life, if someone doesn't trust you, it's pretty hard to change their mind. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Totally. I think that's, you said earlier, the drip, drip, drip of this issue. It's just not going away, and they've not been able to figure out a way to conquer it. And so it's sucking up the air because she does a press conference, and half of it is about the emails and not talking about responding to these issues, not talking about immigration. At least that's the takeaway. That's what hits the media. She may talk about it, but that's not what the, that's not
it's
what
also
the
being,
is.
It's also being moved forward by the media, the New York Times and Washington Post, and a very dogged, you know, pit bull,
and Rubio,
Representative Gowdy. I mean, he's not letting
Rubio
this go.
And right. Bush and Kasich. I don't know who the three of them. Rubio and Bush are already polling ahead of her nationally. It's like 46, 42, 47, 42, or 43. And she's only at 47, 42 versus Trump.
Why do you think, by the way, that I want to ask you to follow up. Why do you think that Rubio has not exploded and surged significantly ahead of the field, Doug?
He's a professional politician. Yeah, and okay. Yeah, I think that there's a lot there. I think he's a good guy. What's happening right now is people are looking at what people are saying, and if they've never done it, they only have head knowledge. They don't have heart knowledge. So if you've never served in the military, if you've never run a business, you can be a professional politician and know it intellectually in your head, and you can talk about it, but Americans know you don't really know it because you haven't really lived it, and it's hard for us to say that professional politicians have this stuff in their heart. And so that's why I think there's a disconnect between the non-politicians and the professional politicians.
Would you say the same thing about Scott Walker?
Yeah.
That again, professional politician, and again, early on, they were viewed as a favorite,
mm-hmm.
but comparing them against this mood of the outsider,
mm-hmm. Particularly amongst the Republican base. And I saw this when I ran, and we talk about, not to go back to this topic, but Trump talks about the wall. When I talked about immigration, everybody just wanted the border secured. Before we talked about visas and how many more we're going to let in here or there, the federal government has a responsibility to secure the border. And so when you hear professional politicians, oh, yeah, we'll get to this and we'll do that and comprehensive this and everything else, and people lose confidence. And so they're seeing confidence in some of these candidates.
You know, you go back to something you said when you were casting aside and casting aspersions and picking apart some of the Trump proposals, that some of them are unrealistic and never going to happen. I think for many moderate to conservative, moderate Republicans or rhino Republicans, those like John McCain, like George Bush, who supported immigration reform, mm-hmm. including Marco Rubio before he changed his mind on it, that many of the things that are in that legislation, to me, are also unrealistic. I think it's unrealistic that if someone has snuck into the country, broken the laws, lived here for many years, for any legislation or any politician to think that those people are going to willingly come out of the shadow, report themselves, give their name to the United States government so they can be taxed, so they then can go back and wait in line to get back in the country, pay a fine, learn the language. These are people that came to the country because they broke the law. Why do politicians, mostly Republicans, why do they believe that this comprehensive reform is going to work? It makes no sense to me in the world of common sense.
It's a good point, and it's something it's something that has to be addressed, and the only way to address it is in the legislation, and then you have to see whether it works. Immigration is a very, very tough issue. I mean, we know that we're not going to have self-deportation or mass deportation, and we also know that we can't – I think it's fair to say that we can't have millions and millions of people continue coming here year over year over year and expect there not to be a problem with it. But to this specific point that you raised, I think the easiest thing to do – and this is why I was so flummoxed at how bad that legislation was – you do – fine them, but you don't kick them out of the country. You actually you finance their fine, so they're not paying anything out of pocket. You figure out where they are and where their jobs are. You give them a $2,000-$3,000 fine. You finance that fine, so it comes out of their paycheck and payroll deduction. You know where they are. They continue working. You don't disrupt their family, and they've paid their debt. And if they don't, then you do have to deport them.
David,
we're seeing the
are my reservations about the comprehensive immigration reform, which the moderate Republicans and Democrats have been trying to get somebody to pass. Do you share my reservations?
Not as strongly. Not as strongly. I think that some kind of it's harder to do a deportation solution. You're not going to drive out millions of people. And furthermore, it doesn't really make sense economically or morally. If we have the free flow of capital, free flow of business, you're going to have the free flow of labor.
And building the wall is only going to make Mexico more combustible.
Yeah, of course. Okay. It would strengthen
their
government.
Even though it may make some Americans feel good, they're not thinking about what the ramifications will be if a wall is built. Anyway, I will trust you folks, or trust me, this issue will not be resolved by next Sunday night. I hope you'll be back. Our thanks this evening to Ron Gibbs for being with us, David Mosiotro, Bruno Berendt, and Doug Truax for being here. This program is a Genevieve production produced in association with WCGO, 1590 AM. And our thanks to Dan Dorfman and Colin Bobbitt and Fritz Goldman for their assistance in the production of this program. Until next week, this is Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, City Walk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Join us at the Museum of Broadcast Communications as we salute Snap, Crackle, and Pop, part of advertising's greatest icons exhibition. Admission is free all next week, August 18th through the 22nd. You'll see classic commercials, vintage print ads, and rare memorabilia. And you'll see the fun-loving boys in person, Snap, Crackle, and Pop, on Friday and Saturday. Free Rice Krispie treats to all. Come to 360 North State in Chicago. Snap, Crackle, and Pop at NBC make the world go round.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.